Hello and welcome everyone to our Client Assessment Tools for Holistic Practitioners, CAT, Case Studies and Q&A Call. The purpose of today is to put a lot of what we've learned thus far into action to help us to actually see what we can do with it and actually practice. So this call is not just about me sharing with you what I know and how I would analyze, although that will be definitely part of it. But it's also about us together looking at these things and you giving me feedback as to what you're seeing and what you're hearing. So I want you guys to get practice with this, not just this being passive and you sitting there and taking notes. First thing, I'm not giving any medical advice here because I am going through some people's cases. I'm not giving any medical advice. I'm actually just teaching you how to read these tests. And if you do have diagnosed medical conditions, you need to be speaking with your practitioner as well. So this is Maura. Maura is 46, 5'5", 105. So she is definitely not overweight. If anything, she could use a few extra pounds on her body. So we don't have to deal with any kind of issues related to weight loss. But what we do have to keep in mind is as we go through and you design a protocol for somebody like this is they're gonna say to you, I don't want to lose weight. So you're going to need to be really careful of how you design a program so they don't go into a rapid detox and weight loss. So she has three children and her top three concerns. Now, when you're doing your case history with people, the first thing you want to find out is what's their biggest concerns? Because you may look at their history and see a whole bunch of stuff jumping out at you or their labs, and those aren't within their top three concerns. So your job to get them to be motivated and inspired to work with you and continue your protocol that you're putting together for them is to make sure that you tie it back to whatever their main complaints are. So Maura's art to heal her digestive system from leaky gut, to repair my adrenals for top energy, repair my thyroid to get off medication and no longer have symptoms. So these are great. So you might be asking, if you ask somebody who's more sophisticated, because she's a health and wellness coach and she's on our program, they may not be saying things in this way. They may be saying, I'm gassy and bloated all the time. I'm tired all the time and I don't have the energy to do all the activities. Or I'm on thyroid medication and I do want to get off that one. Probably I've heard people say a lot. So when you're asking this, you want to ask very specifically. When you're hearing this stuff, you want to very specifically get into the symptoms. So she's going through a little history. So we're going to go through that. And then if there's not a good indication of what the actual symptoms she's currently experiencing are here, we're going to open up Maura's line and ask her to relate those to us. So she first had digestive problems in high school with constipation, took a lot of different medications, but never really resolved the problem. She's been off and on. She's had off and on problems since high school. Okay, so 46 years old, she's had off and on problems for 30 years. That's a long time to be living with these sort of problems. I've had an upper GI and lower GI done and told it was IBS. IBS is basically a diagnosis of exclusion. They'll look at a lower GI and an upper GI. They won't see anything. They won't see any signs of inflammation or irritation or ulceration and basically told your symptoms are irritable bowel syndrome. So she had an endoscope done in 2010 after eating wheat only 10 days and felt sick, and the test indicated redness and lots of inflammation. And Maura, I want you to clarify, do you mean you ate just wheat for 10 days or you had given up wheat and then you gave wheat back? So when you said you ate wheat only for 10 days, tell me more about that. Do you mean you ate just wheat for 10 days or you added wheat back in after having been in a way for it? And you had been gluten-free before that or partially gluten-free before that? So you never had gone away from it for 6 months to a year, but you had been off of it and they wanted to really see what would happen with a wheat challenge. Okay. And you felt sick. So it really confirmed for you, even if the test showed nothing, it confirmed for you that it wasn't a good thing for your system. It was a lot and it aggravated your gut. And were your symptoms aggravated in terms of the bloating and the gas and the constipation? Okay. And so you now are in gluten-free for 13 months. You still have all the same problems, bloating, gas. Are they to the same extent? Are they better sometimes, worse sometimes? They're definitely better, but not 100% cured. So there's something else still going on there. And tell me a little bit more, because these are the questions you're going to want to be asking, because gluten cross-reacts with other foods. So we want to find out from Maura, is she eating any of the foods that commonly cross-react with gluten? And I know you had been doing dairy off and on for a while there. Are you off of dairy as well? Or is that the one of the, it sneaks in every so often? Okay, so she's off gluten and dairy, which are the common ones for causing gut reactions. And we know that other things can cause it. So she still has the same bloating and gas. So we're just going to move on through and then we'll ask you clarifying questions as we do. You did a very good job of being very, very complete here. So thank you. So with the first child, had a C-section. Let's ask some other questions, unless we get to the questions I would be asking right here would be about, since you had these questions in high school, I'd be asking her about antibiotic use, and I'd be asking her about stress in the childhood and early teen years. You know, was there a history of abuse or was there tough times at home? And then the other thing I would be asking about is birth control pills and how her periods went. So you want to find out like all the things that could contribute to bowel stuff, especially when, you know, for a teenager like this. So, food, of course, is a biggie because teenagers notoriously don't eat well. But on the other hand, antibiotic use. So had you had any frequent or even infrequent use of antibiotics as a child or teenager? Not a lot, meaning maybe... Right, not a lot. Some people say, no, I only do them about once every 6 months, and that's not a lot. Ear infections, do you know, and this is a really key question that if they can find this out, will give you some clues as to why they're having issues, is if you had any antibiotics within the first 6 months to year of life. Yeah, so heart, that, sometimes those kind of questions, you know, you can ask, but you're not necessarily going to get it. But the statistics show that people who have antibiotics within the first 6 months, year of life, tend to have more atopic illness, meaning allergic type illness. So things like asthma, things like dermatitis, and it could be gut type of stuff where the gut is really, really sensitive to allergens. So keeping that in mind is good things to ask people early on in the history. So she had a C-section for her first child. Were you on antibiotics then? Okay. Oh, and as a teenager, did you have irregular cycles? Did they try putting you on birth control pills? Was there any exposure like that? First started noticing these symptoms in high school with constipation. Was there any clue before that as a kid? Did you stay home with tummy aches from school a lot? Were there any things that you were aware of before that or really specifically in high school? Okay. And was it cycle related? Like menstrual cycle related. At certain times of the month, you'd get them. No, it was constant. Okay. So now we're narrowing it down a little bit. So it's really important to start to ask people questions. So it wasn't a constant problem. It was more related to when you were traveling or going on a trip. Not just, but you knew that when you traveled, that was most likely when it was going to flare it up. But there were other times that it happened, but you didn't really know what was related. Got it. Okay, so first child in 1995, double bunion surgery in 1996. Second child, born with pneumonia, both were on antibiotics. He stayed in the hospital for 8 days. So let me ask you this, in terms of the constipation, was it a constant problem between high school and your first child, which was quite a number of years later, or were there other issues with your digestion, or were there periods that you were symptom-free? Was the gas and bloating there as well, or just the constipation? And diet-wise, throughout there, were you on typical college student diet, or were you aware and on a better diet than that? And then before your first child was born, was the constipation an issue during the pregnancy, like over-the-counter medications, or were you taking, and that would get you having a regular a bowel movement every day, or what was the goal there with the, and did you ever do colonics or enemas at that point? Okay. All right. So in 1998, well, after her second child was born, she developed thyroid problems.
Thyroid problems after pregnancy, as we learned in the thyroid module, is quite common. And estrogen levels affect thyroid. And I would love to have seen Maura's labs from back in 1998 when they diagnosed that. Was it an L? You probably don't even know because you weren't even aware of what it could have been, but in terms of was the TSH elevated, was the T4 affected, were there antibodies, were any of those other things tested?
Yeah, that I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And here's another thing that I recommend for all of you and for recommending to your patients and your clients is that teach them that their medical records are their responsibility and that what they should be doing is whenever they have a test, that they get copies. And a lot of doctors are really protective about that. I have a client I'm working with remotely, and she's on the East Coast, and she went to a holistic doctor there that was she was referred to by her dentist and for IV vitamin C treatment based on some other things that were going on. And she had some tests done, and she immediately wanted to get copies of the tests because she's very smart, because I've taught her how to read her tests a little bit. And she wanted me to have copies. And the nurse was like, we don't give away those things. And she's like, but it's my right. And she went back and forth, and I finally called up. And I said, she signed a release, and she has a right to these tests. So you need to establish that with your practitioners, or have your patients, if they're working with a medical practitioner, establish that those are their records. And it's very important to keep track of your own records. And I highly recommend that you use the spreadsheet. You're welcome to share that with your clients or update it and make your own version of it. But the spreadsheet is a great way for them to keep track of year after year after year, so you can look for patterns and trends. So this is, as we go through this case, is it okay if I just keep giving you little extra bonus tips? Because that's what this is all about, is to bring up some of the things that may not have been brought up during our normal course of the program. So thyroid problems developed on armored thyroid, 100 milligrams, and still experience many thyroid symptoms. Okay, so tell us more about those thyroid symptoms that you're currently experiencing.
Right now, a lot of hair loss, a lot of thinning of the hair, dry skin, still the underlying fatigue mm-hmm. going on, the cold feet, cold hands. Those are about the top ones.
Great. Okay. So she's on armor. She's still having symptoms. So we're suspecting that there's something else going on, that it's not just that she's short of T3, T4, but there's a receptor resistance going on, which is very likely, or there may be a conversion issue going on that we'll take a look when we look at her labs at what that might be. So in 1999, her third child, and went on bed rest at 29 weeks, gave rest at 36 weeks, helpful 7-pound, you wrote IBS baby, 7-pound baby. rest was very strong. I assume you meant 7-pound baby.
Yeah, 7-pound baby.
Yeah, yes. The IBS was on your mind. in 2001, dad diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she was a main caregiver, died in 2003. I'm so sorry about that. That's really hard. That was, that's a lot of stress on you. Where did the lupus diagnosis come in? I don't see that written down here.
Oh, I guess I must have forgotten to put that in. Yeah, that was right around the same time, 2002, 2003 is when they started doing the testing, and they first thought it was rheumatoid arthritis, and then they sent the tests back, and then it came up with the lupus markers.
So that's a really stressful time, and so something, this constipation and all the other stuff may have been, a lot of the gut stuff may have been related to the lupus. Now, lupus is an autoimmune disease, and it's more of a systemic autoimmune disease. It doesn't usually have one area that it attacks. It attacks many areas. And the thing is about autoimmune diseases is that they also go in groups. So you can have an autoimmune disease, that an autoimmune condition that would attack your thyroid, that would attack your intrinsic factor-making cells in your gut. It can attack the cells in the pancreas, the islet cells, or the insulin itself, the joints. There's so many things that autoimmune conditions can test. And we talked about when we did the immune system module that there's a cross-reactivity, not the cross-reactivity panel, but the autoimmune panel. It's quite a pricey panel, but it's oftentimes very, very telling and can explain a lot of symptoms that people maybe haven't. I haven't run it yet because, like you said, it is pricey. It's around $500, and most people don't want to spring for the $500. However, just make a note of that, Maura, and everybody else, out to the side. As we go through this, we'll see if she's a good candidate for this. And as you're going through a case, you want to be, you know, keeping a side list as you're going through it, or making notes in the side as you're writing on their file. I do a lot of note taking as I'm writing, as I'm reading their history, about what questions I want to ask them to clarify and what tests I'm thinking might be needed. I may cross some of them off as I get further along, but that would be one that I would put on right now. She's got an autoimmune condition, and she's been on antibiotics. She has a lot of constipation. I'd be looking for something maybe like a Crohn's or an ulcerative colitis as well. So let's write that down as possibly the CIRX autoimmune panel. So in 2002, went through what was put on the pill. Is that what should I say here? Was put on the pill in April 2003 and stayed on it for 6 months. Okay, you did put the lupus diagnosis, but it was I just saw the 2003 and then the 2002, and you started Plaquenil and steroids. Symptoms were a rash, allergy to the sun, painful joints and muscles, and fatigue. Also told had fibromyalgia. Now, let me ask you this. When you, let me go back to when you were diagnosed with, you wrote that you had, they asked you to do a lot of, 2010. Okay, so we're just trying to get the chronology here. So the endoscope was done in 2010. So at what point did you go off of gluten or start to reduce the amount of gluten that you were on? At what point did you decide to go off of gluten or hear about going gluten-free relating to all this stuff?
It was probably around 2008.
Okay.
I started going gluten-free.
Okay. All right, again, so nobody mentioned this. Your docs never mentioned this as part of the lupus thing?
No, nobody with lupus, fibromyalgia. It wasn't anybody. It was actually like an acupuncturist that I went to.
Yeah, yeah.
Said, why don't you try going gluten-free?
Yep. So here's the deal. And with any kind of autoimmune disease, if you hear somebody that has an autoimmune disease, you want to get them off of gluten right away. You want to get them off of dairy right away. You want to do an allergy elimination protocol with them and just get them off of anything that could possibly be a situation. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. We'll talk about that more in the allergy component of Module 9. I want to go into detail about how, you know, the allergy testing isn't as accurate, and how you can do what's called a rare foods diet or a fast or a juice cleanse or something in order to determine what people are allergic to. But see, in this particular case, Maura may have been able to get her lupus in remission a lot earlier had somebody talked to her about gluten-free. And this is where what you do, what we do, is so valuable to people. It could save them years of misery. So she started on the Plaquenil and steroids in 2002. Her father died in 2003. And then in 2005 was told she had interstitial cystitis. Again, these are all things that can be problematic with people who have food allergies, leaky gut. Interstitial cystitis is actually very similar to leaky gut in that it's a leaky bladder, and that the tissue in the bladder itself, you get more openings, you get more leaks, the interstitial spaces open up and widen, and some of the urine actually leaks into the interstitial spaces so that the actual tissue of the bladder is irritated. And they may have nothing in the bladder, but it's feeling like they have a full bladder, it's feeling irritated, and very commonly associated with problems that occur with allergies and autoimmune disease. And so in 2005, she was told she had interstitial cystitis, put on medications, don't remember when got on and when got off, and these symptoms seem to come and go. So now she has yet another stress on her system. 2006, was hit by a car while riding bike, neck problems and herniated discs, felt more emotional trauma. Why did this happen? I was training for a triathlon, started to question many things, felt uneasy getting back on the bike. More stress. So you see that she has had like continual stress having children is stressful on the body. And plus it's stressful in general because you're having to be up all night with kids. It's a wonderful experience, but it's also a stress. And then the father, taking care of her father, he died, the lupus, and now on top of it all, she's hit by a car, herniates discs, and is feeling just really vulnerable at this point and victimized almost at this point. And very challenging. And then in 2009, diagnosed with mono, or EBV. This was lots of trial and error on different medication, thinking it was the lupus or the fibromyalgia. Had bone scans with dye to rule out bone cancer. After 3 months, they tested for mono. Stressful, not knowing what was wrong with me. So on and on. And these are the sorts of things that we could really shortchange really early on by, you know, somebody had talked to Maura in high school about her constipation and her diet and put her on a really good diet and a gluten-free diet and whole foods and greens, she might never be where she is now and might never have experienced the lupus, the mono, the whole string of things that are going on with her. And right now, we're doing cleanup work, right? She's had so many things going on. We're trying to figure out what all the pieces are that have been injured and how to put them back together after the damage has been done. 2010, a vaginal sling put in for bladder issues seemed to help. So more of the bladder issues were related to the bladder. You were actually incontinent. Is that what was going on with the interstitial cystitis?
Yes. A lot of incontinence, yes.
Is that what prompted you to look for help, or were you having the burning and feeling of fullness in your urine, in your bladder? What other things were going on there?
Yeah, I had them all. I had the incontinence, the burning, the fullness in the bladder. So when I went to the doctor, he tested for everything, and then he did say that the incontinence was probably due to, childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
The incontinence started after my son, my second child. Mm-hmm. He was 9 pounds, and they had a really hard time getting him out. His shoulder was caught.
Oh.
So they gave me, like, an extra episiotomy, I guess.
Okay.
Which never really healed, because since he was in the hospital, I was overdoing it right after giving birth to him. I was walking around and doing stairs and doing all that, so the episiotomy never healed correctly.
Right.
So I had gone back into the doctor at about 2 weeks, and he said, oh, my gosh, you haven't healed from your episiotomy. So now he said, we can't restitch you, so really the only way to heal is from the inside out, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, back then I didn't know anything.
Right.
So it was probably 6 weeks healing from the episiotomy,
Yeah. Yeah. So a series of physical and emotional stresses on Maura have led her to where she is now. So the vaginal sling helped for a while, and then what? Tell us a little bit about a vaginal sling and what that is.
The vaginal sling, from what I understood, kind of pulls everything back together so you don't have the incontinence. He did say it lasts anywhere from, some people like a year, some 5 years, where all of a sudden it'll loosen up again and you'll start to get the incontinence again.
Okay. So is it stitching that they do, or what are they actually doing? Do you know?
Yeah, it's a surgical procedure, and it's just a stitching.
Yeah, okay, that's what I figured. Okay, so at what point, 2012 is when we first met, when you joined the Before Be Gone program, and I remember when you fractured your foot and it took so long to heal. At what point did you go off the medication for the lupus and feel like the lupus was under control?
In about 2010.
2010. So after you went gluten-free and you learned more about nutrition and started cleaning up your diet and all.
Right, around 2010, and then I felt secure enough to come off the medication.
Okay, all right.
Again, I did that on my own. My doctor didn't approve of it.
Okay, of course. And have you been having the tests, the ANA tests redone to see if there's still some antibody activity?
Yeah, I did it like every 6 months, but after like 3 times when it came back okay.
Great.
So I probably haven't done it in a year.
Okay. Yeah, but you did have the negative test, so it was really clear that you managed to get these antibodies under control.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
It just shows what's possible, because people think that that's a life sentence. All right.
Yeah.
So 2012, the foot adrenal stress test had adrenal fatigue. We'll take a look at those. It looks like you had a second one done, which I just saw in this more recently from a different lab.
Right. That was, I was at another place, and there was a nutritionist person there, and she's like, oh, I can run the adrenal stress test. Again, before we learned all about the testing. But, you know, so I thought they were going to come out the same way. So it's a little different.
It's a little different because I noticed they run, they're different scales. So the DHEA, you know, I had to look, and I don't know what the really normal range is for that scale, because I'm used to the diagnostics and the biohealth ones, which run on the same scale. But anyway, they'll be definitely helpful, and the graphs are helpful. And it looks like, based on what I see, there's some improvement, but there's also some issues with elevated cortisol now. So we'll see. We'll take a look at that in a bit. So first you took Synthroid for that.
Yeah, the
and
first.
Now you're on Armor. How long did you take the Synthroid for?
I took Synthroid for a lot of years. So let's see, I went on it 2000, probably till 2008, and then I switched to Lovaxyl because I just felt like I wasn't getting, you know, they kept switching my medication, and I was still with all the symptoms.
Okay. So let's stop there. She kept switching her thyroid medication, and she still was having symptoms. What does that tell? Somebody raise your hand. Oh, there's Debbie. I want to have somebody raise their hand and say, what are you thinking when someone says they put me on thyroid medication and I'm still having the symptoms? Debbie?
Well, actually, I'd raised my hand before to clarify a little about the sling. I thought I might be able to elucidate that.
Thank you, Debbie. Go ahead and do that.
It's a surgical, picture a sling, like a hammock.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is do a procedure, and I don't know if they use a plastic or what, but somehow they pull up the tissues that have stretched out and gotten lax, and that's how it tightens things up.
Okay. Then that's why it can loosen again, because the stress and strain on that area can then cause it to lax again. Got it. Great.
Right.
Thank you Debbie's our resident medical expert. She's an MD, and so she is familiar with the conventional medical approaches to things. Well, how about if you tell us a little bit about, I know you'll have the answer to this, is when you hear this now of somebody that's been changing medication, and you hear this all the time, and having been through all the medical, this conventional medical stuff happens all the time, right? It takes forever to get the thyroid medication, and you give the medication, and maybe some symptoms get better, but others don't, or it doesn't get better at all. What are you thinking now that we're looking at it from a more functional approach?
My whole perspective on it has totally changed. It was an area that I never understood well, and I think as I look back, it's because it never made any sense. And that's why I submitted my mother's case, because I am absolutely convinced she's on, quote, optimal dose with great numbers, and she feels like crap. And I just think the functional approach is just a totally, it's a reasonable way of treating the patient instead of the numbers. But that's why that was probably one of the biggest things I wanted to get out of the class, because I never had a good grasp on thyroid stuff because it never made sense.
Never made sense. Did you find that after last week you were able to get a good sense of it? After last week's talk?
That helps, but I need a lot of review and a lot of repetition.
Yeah, and I find that to be the case, and we'll go through it because everybody's cases today have some thyroid in them. So what we're thinking here then, since she wasn't getting, since she didn't respond to Synthroid or Lovaxyl, which are T4, by the way, right? It's just synthetic T4, that we're thinking she either has an issue with T4 to T3 conversion, which that's not affecting, or she's got some receptor stuff, or she might have some binding globulin stuff, right, where the she's given that medication and it's floating around in her bloodstream bound to protein, but if she has excess estrogen, she has extra binding globulin, and it's not being released, and so she might as well not be taking anything at all, because for what her tissues actually get to experience, she's not on medication. Now, she went to the Armor, which is the it's the T3 and T4. So that, to me, says, well, maybe it's not as much of a T4 to T3 conversion issue, although it still can be, even though she's taking T4 and T3. We're going to look at her ratios of T4, free T4 and free T3, to see what actually is happening, how much of that T4 is being converted. Because it could be under conversion and still have the T3 in the normal range, but if you have a really high T4 and a really low T3, that's still saying there's a conversion issue and you're not getting as much. But the other issue, based on Maura's history here with so much stress, is a receptor issue and getting those receptors healed. And in that case, until the factors contributing to receptor burnout are addressed, the problem with the thyroid is not going to go away no matter how much medication she takes. And if we get that addressed, she may no longer need any medication because it's not an issue with her thyroid and how much it's producing as much as an issue with the processes, the functional processes, and the resistance at the cellular level. So it's interesting, and we'll take a look at her labs, but I'm just kind of, what I'm doing right now is planting some seeds. I'm planting some seeds to give you an idea of how, when you're reading a case, before you even get to all the details, you're formulating in your mind questions. So the questions I would be, and the notes I would be writing at the side of my page there on the, in the column there, would be something like check thyroid numbers, check T3, T4, total T4, T3 free, and possibly reverse T3. And we'll see what those numbers look like before we decide on whether reverse T3, because we also want to know how much of the T4 is going to reverse T3. But we may not even need that test. We may be able to tell without it, and I'll share when we get there. Okay, so we're looking at so far other antibodies in the body in addition to, or now instead of, because she seems to have gotten the lupus antibodies under control. I would also be writing when was the last time the lupus antibodies were tested, which I asked her, and she said it probably hasn't been done in a year, so it's probably a good idea since she's still having some symptoms. But Maura, overall, would you say that the symptoms that you're experiencing now are better, worse, or same as they were back when you were first experiencing the cystitis and all the things that led to the lupus diagnosis?
I would say they're better. I feel like I still have all the same symptoms, but better, not as severe.
Not as severe, not as debilitating. Okay. And if you right. could rate them and just give a lump sum to overall how you were feeling back then in terms of it being bad on a 1 to 10 scale, where was it back when you were really at your worst?
Probably a 9.
And where are you now? And I know it may vary from day to day, but on average, where are you now?
Like a 5.
Okay. So there's significant improvement. She's on the right track, but there's still some fine-tuning that needs to happen here to get more up to where she really wants to be. And I was going to say back to where she really wants to be, but if she's been having symptoms since she was in high school, we probably want to get her to a place that she's never been before. Would you say that that's probably correct, Maura?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of times we say, oh, we're going to get you back to a good state of health, and people are saying, well, I've felt like crap since I was 5. I don't want to go back anywhere. I want to go forward. And so we may have to change that terminology a little bit. And you're 46 now, so gave you, okay. 2001 to 2 went through menopause. That's really early to be going through menopause, don't you think? That was what, at age 35?
Yes, after my third child, yes.
So how soon after your third child? Was it that you just never got your periods back after that?
I got them back, and then they started to slowly diminish. It would be once every 3 months, once every 6 months, then once every 9 months, and then I completely stopped.
Wow. So you completely stopped back in 2002?
Yes.
So at age 36, 35, you completely had no, okay, wow. Doctor started you on the pill April 2003 and stayed on it for 6 months. And what was the rationale for starting you on the pill after having gone through menopause?
That I was too young to be going through menopause. And, again, I didn't know a lot back then, so it was
right.
either I needed to – you would probably be able to explain either why would you go on the pill to keep your estrogen levels up, to not get cancer. I remember something about that.
Okay. So it was to give you that. So rather than birth control, what we would want to be looking at is bioidenticals, right? Some bioidentical hormone replacement that is going to mimic what her body would be doing and keep her protected if need be. And at this point, I would have done a 24-hour urine test to see where everything was and to see what you really needed and to fine-tune and customize that plan, because the pill is not the answer. The pill is meant to suppress ovulation and make your body think it's pregnant, not exactly mimicking natural menopause, do you think? So you've got a lot of stuff going on. And this is a whole case where you're going to see where it's medicine at its finest, basically. Don't know what's going on with you, but let's just give you some things to control the symptoms so it doesn't look like it's going on with you, when really it's going on underneath, but we're just doing things to change things around. And on top of that, you get side effects from the various and sundry medications and the way they work on the body. So then, go ahead.
At one point, I was on the lupus medication, the pill, interstitial cystitis medication, and then medication for the irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh, my goodness. And this is all on a young person in her 30s.
Yeah, so then they put me on something for, like, the fibromyalgia because, you know, they thought everything wasn't quite working, so they thought I was going through depression with my father having passed away. So they did put me on the Zoloft for, like, 6 months. And I think, like, when I looked and I saw that I was on, like, 6 medications and I was so young, that's when I finally was like, okay, this has to come to an end.
You have to find something else. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you did. And I think you're on the mend, and it's just going to be, because you had so much intervention, you are not the classic case. So this is a case where, this is why I'm glad you're in this program, guys, because if you had gone through your IIN program, or you're an acupuncturist, or you really don't know how to dig like this stuff, acupuncture, nothing against acupuncture, because acupuncturists dig a lot more than anybody else, but it's not pulling it all together. There's certain things you're going, okay, what's going on here? Acupuncture is probably your best bet, acupuncture and herbal medicine, compared to all the other stuff you've been through. But looking at whatever you got in your training was not going to be enough to take you deeper into what can be happening in a very difficult case like this. So the three cases that we're going to look at today are not the typical people that are going to walk in your door. And just know, just in case you haven't really delved really deeply into starting to practice yet, majority of cases are not going to be this severe. But as you get known for being good at these kinds of cases, you're going to attract more and more, whether you want to or not. So just keep that in mind. But a lot of the people that you're going to see, especially if you're seeing people from mainstream, are going to be easy compared to this. They may have a lot of stuff going on, but if they haven't had a lot of the interventions and a lot of the medications so far, and they haven't tried a lot of the good diets, you're going to see results. But these are cases where, hey, you know, she's done acupuncture, she's tried different diets, raw food, cooked food, whole food, gluten-free, now doing the leaky gut forward protocol, and that seems to be helping with the weekly colonics. So there's all sorts of things, but she's got a lot of layers here, So let's just look here. There's been off lupus medication. She did a very good job of this case. Some of the things I'm asking her about, she actually did respond to later on, but you'll have read the whole case first before you start asking questions, so you won't have to be asking questions that they already told you about. And also, by the way, as you're going through a case like this, and there's a lot of things that are presented out of chronological order just because she's trying to, you know, explain things, is to really put down a timeline and write a timeline, have a piece of scrap paper and be writing the timeline, and then have a list of all the medications she's been on and off of as time went on, and in terms of this issue, so in all of her issues. And then the list of the various areas that have been affected. Immune system, big time, right? Because she's had the EBV, she has the lupus, the digestive tract for sure, that's her main area of complaint, the thyroid, the adrenals. So she's got a lot of areas that need addressing, and it's going to be really valuable to be able to hone in on what do we think is the most important piece to start with. Okay, and she's already started with a lot of pieces. So in Maura's case, because she's started already, well, we're going to be looking at what's the next piece to really focus heavy-duty attention on to get the most bang. So she's working on the adrenals. She's taken licorice. When you say you took licorice, DHEA, pregnenolone, and maca, does that mean you're no longer taking them?
Right, I'm no longer taking the licorice, DHEA, or the pregnenolone. I'm still doing the maca, astragalus, and ashwagandha.
Okay, and what prompted you to stop the licorice, DHEA, and pregnenolone?
I guess nothing prompted me besides maybe I was starting to feel better. So, and I wasn't sure how long I was supposed to stay on it.
Okay.
Like
so here's a classic, and this is something to really work with your clients too, and Maura, not making you wrong or anything, just to say this is a common mistake. You take stuff for a while and then you go, well, I guess it was supposed to work, and don't go back and get things retested to see if it was improved, or you just decide, oh, I feel better now, I can go off of it. And either one of those puts you in a precarious situation. When we look at the tests, we look at, say, the adrenal test, and she, as far as I recall, you know, when we looked at her test, she had low DHEA. I think it was a 1 when you first did the test, and the pregnenolone, and I can't remember if the progesterone, we'll have to look when we see those tests, but whatever shows up in those tests, you put somebody on a protocol to rebalance it, but people always want to know, when do I get off of it? You say, when we take your test again and we're seeing a change, and at that point we'll adjust it. We may lower the dose of something. We may raise the dose of something, because remember, when people were in a stage 3 adrenal fatigue, we were giving them a lot less DHEA than when they were in a stage 1. So that we may, even though they're DHEA may have been very depleted in a stage 3. We may only be giving them a small amount of DHEA because we don't want that to suppress cortisol, because cortisol is already low. And then as they move up the scale, we'll be adjusting the amount of DHEA and pregnenolone we give them to help balance the problem, or the herbs that we use. And again, like the licorice, we'd be looking at only giving licorice at the times when it's really, really high, when the levels of cortisol are really high. To bring them down. I mean, really low to bring them up, sorry. And PS, phosphatidylserine, when they're really high, to bring them low. And if that shifts, if the pattern shifts, you want to adjust that. So in an ideal world, you redo the adrenal stress test every 3 to 4 months. Stay on the protocol for the 3 to 4 months. You redo the adrenal stress test, and then you determine what changes need to be made. It's best to do it with the same lab each time, because there's variations in the way they report them. There's variations in the scales, the units that they report, you know, milligrams per deciliter, picograms per milliliter. There's a lot of different levels, and it's really a good idea to really be monitoring the person to get the test taken with the same lab each time. That's the best way. If it happens that they do it differently, then, of course, you can try to adapt, and you will adapt. So types of practitioners, currently going to a doctor to help with the digestion and going to start looking into the thyroid issues. So tell me more about that. What kind of doctor are you going to help you with the digestion?
You know, I had just followed up with a chiropractor that did muscle testing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we weren't really addressing the digestion. And then I was following up with my doctor that does the thyroid medication. That's two separate doctors. The doctor that does my thyroid medication is
okay.
More of a holistic OB-GYN.
Right.
And I just found him through finding someone that would be able to give me Armour Thyroid, which, again, there are so many doctors that won't even prescribe
right.
Armour Thyroid
right.
for you.
Now, does he understand the whole pattern of thyroid and how to look at that?
Yeah, it seems like he has been, but now I think like I should get retested and then go back again. So I was just checking with since we just switched with the Armour and I've had this digestive problem for so long. So he's the one who ran for the gallbladder and everything, the ultrasound. So
okay.
Now he realizes it's been an ongoing problem. So just recently he said, you know, you need to address this more. And I've been telling him what I've been doing through the ERC program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was he supportive of that?
Yes, very supportive. I wanted
okay.
to know all the products and the brand names and everything. Yeah, so he was very supportive and said, you know, I think you're on the right track, but it doesn't seem to be solving itself.
Right. So here's the deal. Now, Maura is in the lowest level, the bronze level of the ERC program, which is the level which is just getting the materials and group support and asking questions on calls. And Maura is awesome and asks lots of questions. what I would prefer to see if I was trying to help Maura more specifically, and all the help I've given Maura has been through that forum and this forum here. And what I would want to see if I'm working with somebody at a level where I'm seeing them on a regular basis, so I'm having check-ins with them and looking at their labs on a regular basis, I would have Maura be doing her tests every 3 months. And I would be following along and having these every other week conversations with her so that we could be fine-tuning her stuff as she goes along. And so if you're working with somebody, that's the disadvantage of a big group program, is that somebody who is what more severe is really not the candidate for a group program, needs more of the one-on-one type of work. Somebody with more of the general stuff works, does really well with the group kind of program. So just to put that in there. And then the colonics with the leaky gut program. You started with that leaky gut protocol when we first started talking about that in ERC back in probably December or January, and then you had some issues where some of the supplements were causing you to get more bloated, and we suspected die-off, and you backed off. So are you saying that you're getting back into doing that leaky gut protocol now? Is that
where you're at? Yeah, I'm back on the leaky gut protocol.
Okay, and you didn't have the flare-up like you did before. You went gradually with increasing the doses.
Right, right.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that I probably have to stay on the leaky gut protocol for longer than just the month.
Probably, yeah, given how long it's been. And then you and I, when you were out for the Spring into Vitality, had a conversation, and we talked about working with the liver, and we'll get to that in a bit. And because here's the deal, when we look at constipation can be a gut problem, right? It could be a lack of fiber, a lack of fluid, a lack of contraction. The peristalsis is decreased in the gut. It can be a stuck ileocecal valve. So there's any number of things can play into constipation. But what people don't realize, a lot of conventional practitioners don't realize, is that the gallbladder and the liver play a huge role in constipation. And if there's some sluggishness in the gallbladder and the liver area, and the bile is not being moved and dumped as well as it should, then you're going to have a problem with constipation. So some constipation issues are related to the liver. Some constipation issues are related to the adrenals. And I would say that with constipation, there's oftentimes a multifactorial approach here where that many of the different areas are being compromised, right? So you've got the bile isn't moving as quickly as it should, so you're not eliminating the way you should be there. You've got the adrenals being stimulated, and you have high cortisol or spikes of high cortisol, maybe overall regular or normal or low cortisol, but if you're having spikes and if you're having lots of stress over time, what that does is causes the high levels of cortisol, which shuts down valves and can lead to constipation. She's also got the thyroid issue, which can contribute. She may have had a thyroid issue since she was a teenager, not uncommon for that to be underanalyzed, overlooked. And so the thyroid, so she's got a lot of contributing factors going into the thyroid. Now, she addressed the issue with the gluten intolerance, which was confirmed when they did the scope and saw how red and irritated her lining was when she did the gluten. There may be some other gut issues or other food issues going on, but really we also have to look at the role of the adrenals, the role of the thyroid, and the role of the liver in contributing to the constipation, which then causes the gas, the bloating, et cetera. And Maura's been handling the constipation for a while with natural forms of laxatives, senna and cascara. Is that right? Various forms like that. Okay.
Yes.
And you are making sure you have bowel movements daily, or?
Yes, daily, as long as I'm using some form of something.
Right. And this is another question. This just brings it up, just to talk about history when you're talking to people and they say, I have bowel movements every day. Is you also want to ask them about their intake. Are you drinking caffeine, which can stimulate more frequent bowel movements? Are you taking senna tea or some sort of laxatives? Are they taking Metamucil or anything like that? And so they may not think of themselves as constipated. If you say, are you constipated, they may say no. Maura is astute enough to realize that she's constipated even though she's having bowel movements every day, because she's only having bowel movements every day because she's stimulating those bowel movements every day. Okay, so these are all the questions you want to ask. People who are more holistic alternative, they may not be doing like, you know, the over-the-counter laxatives or stuff like that. They may be doing colonics every day. And if they don't do a colonic, if they miss their colonics, they're not moving their bowels on their own. All of these are indicating some disruption in the elimination system, and we need to find out where that is. Does that make sense? Okay. So, and not to say doing colonics is not a good thing, especially if you've had constipation problems for a while. It can help to restore those the peristalsis and to get things moving. And you also want to eliminate the toxins, which is a big deal because you don't want to have them recycling. So good habits that she has, regular exercise and heart math. Bad habits that may be negatively influencing, does not always leave 3 hours after dinner before bed. How are you doing with that? I know that was a really serious problem when you first started with ERC and before, and you brought that up.
Yes, doing much better. I do feel like just this past week I haven't been as good. I haven't had any type of, like, you know, I used to eat a meal at 9 o'clock at night practically,
mm-hmm.
You know, like a fourth dinner.
Right.
So now if I've had anything, it's been earlier, maybe 7:38, and it'll be something very small, and then I stop myself.
Okay. And is the reason you get that is because you're not having a big enough dinner? Because I know for a while you were standing at the counter eating dinners, and you weren't necessarily eating a full meal.
Yeah, I think why, again, if I eat early, like at 4 or 5, all of a sudden I will start to get, you know, a little hungry again, you know, at 8.
Okay. Yeah, because that's 3 hours already. And what time do you usually go to bed?
Between 9:30 and 10.
Okay. So if we go back, 9:30 would be 6:30. So what I would recommend you do is check in with, if you've had an early dinner, like 4 or 5, check in with yourself at around 6 or 6:30 and see, am I going to make it to get to bed or not, and then go ahead and eat something. Maura is underweight, so Maura doesn't have to worry so much about, you know, having the meals closer together stimulating her to be storing extra fat, because she doesn't have that issue. So she can look at it that way. Otherwise, I would say, well, don't eat so early. Make sure that you are eating your meal at 5:30 or 6, or, you know, finish at 6:30 so that you have your 3 hours. But that 3 hours before bed is super important when it comes to elimination. It's really important to go to bed. It's really nice to go to bed on an empty colon, because the best detoxification happens. After I had an interview that I did on my radio show with Dr. Thomas Lodi, who works with people with cancer, and he does integrative work with cancer, he was talking about how important it was to go to bed on an empty colon and have your detox mechanisms kick in and really fight off whatever else is going on. So as we talked about it, we thought, well, maybe even having an enema before bed might be a good thing if you're not having a regular bowel movement after dinner. A lot of people will just have their regular bowel movement a half an hour to an hour after dinner, and that's great. And if you don't, then doing something like an enema after dinner, it doesn't have to be permanently, but just to kind of start get you in that pattern, but make sure that you eat something at 6 or 6:30. So is that something you can do? You can check in and see at 6 or 6:30. Don't wait for that really strong hunger to come in at 7:30 or 8. To really say, okay, I think I'm not going to make it, and have something then, so that you do have that full 3 hours.
Yes, that's what, okay. I should start doing.
Okay, good. Does not always stay away from all six main food allergies. Always wheat and corn. So, which are the ones that you're not necessarily staying away from dairy?
Yeah, I guess I should have added dairy in there. Dairy, pretty much 100% again. Any time that I've had it, probably in the past 6 months, it was kind of more annoying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't going to have the ice cream and being like, oh, it's just one serving, not a big deal.
Right.
It was more like I might have found out later if I was someplace that it had dairy when I wouldn't have had suspected that it had dairy.
Right.
I guess maybe peanuts, and I've had some soy.
Okay. Okay, and when you eat peanuts, do you notice any difference in how you feel?
Usually I have peanuts in the form of peanut butter, not just the peanuts. So not a big difference, but again, my symptoms come up. I'm one of those people 24 hours later.
Yeah, yeah.
So which is, you know, which I think is harder for people. So again, just an FYI for when we're working with clients.
Right.
Because you think you're okay. You're like, oh, okay, I ate that peanut butter. I'm fine. That's fine.
Right.
You know, and then you might go and have some again 4, 5, 6 hours later and be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm fine with that. And then, oh, well, maybe I'll be fine with this other food too. And then you add in that other food. And then the next day is when it hits me.
It's when it hits you. Yeah. Yeah.
So
you didn't go through, did you go through the FAST program when I did it last year?
No.
So we're going to be going through that as part of ERC in the next few weeks. So that's something to keep in mind that we'll go through and help you to identify. And there's ways to identify. For those of you who don't know what the FAST program is, it's a program I put together called Food Allergy Spy Training. Basically helps people to identify their most common foods that they eat and then do an elimination diet that's either a fast for 4 days or a just juices for 4 days based on foods they don't normally eat a lot of. So they'd be juicing maybe some oddball green things that they don't normally do, or a what I call a rare foods diet. And I got that from Elton Haas, I think, was the first person I heard mention a rare foods diet in his book on food allergies. And his book is called The False Fat Diet. Very good treatise on how, you know, food allergies can help us to maintain fat even though we're not eating more calories than we should. But anyway, that doesn't apply to Maura, but in this case, the fact that there may be some other hidden food allergies that she's not aware of because of the delayed onset, what we do with the FAST program is have people go down to either the fasting or a rare foods diet, just foods that they almost never eat, that can't really be causing their ongoing problems because they almost never have them and they're not in the families with things that they normally have, and then introduce foods. So you could introduce peanuts, for example. So after not having had peanuts for, you know, or any of that stuff for 4 days, you're probably going to see an improvement. If you don't, then we look at, well, why aren't you seeing an improvement and have to go a little further. But generally, people are going to see a really good improvement in that 4 or 5 days, and then they start gradually adding things in. But you add it in one thing at a time. So if you want to find out if peanuts are a culprit, you eat the same thing you've been eating during that allergy elimination piece, and then just the peanuts, like she did with the wheat several years ago, 2-3 times a day. And you just keep adding it for 3 days. And if after 3 days you don't feel any better, any worse, you still feel fine, then that food passes the test. But if at some point while you're adding it during those 3 days, you start to feel the symptoms coming back, then that's put on the suspect list. And so I take people through that step by step how to do that, and that's part of one of the bonuses we give in the Energy Recharge Program, which everybody in the Energy Recharge Practitioner Training is part of, and some of you in the CAT program maybe, but that's something that you can get into on as a separate program, and you can do a self study, and you can get the materials so that you can help guide people, your clients, through it. So I think that looking at that with you, Maura, is going to be one of the pieces. Is to really look for some of those other hidden food allergens. Peanuts do tend to be hard on digestion. Peanuts contain a lot of arachidonic acid, which is it's the only vegetable foods that have high levels of that, which can contribute to inflammation. So good idea to kind of look at those. But again, we look at the top 6 allergens for people. They may have an allergen that's not in the top 6. They may be allergic to broccoli, right? And so it's really wanting to understand what is it that they don't eat on a regular basis, get rid of it, see if there's an improvement, and then find out, and then stay away from those foods. Now, some people who do kinesiology can reset that. NAET is a process that people use to reset that. You can do it with acupuncture points to help you, but really healing the leaky gut is the best way. But the problem is if you continue to eat allergens, no matter how good of a gut repair protocol you do, you're constantly re-injuring the gut. And if you're eating any of the foods on the list, and we have that list in Energy Recharge of foods that hurt the gut, I want you to go back, Maura, and look at that list and make sure that you are 100% off any of the foods on the list that says foods that hurt the gut.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Great. major stresses, children and health concerns, and starting a business and taking classes. Okay, so we already do that. So here's your leaky gut. For leaky gut, she's doing glutamate RX, NAC, and B1, plus digestive enzymes, H-scale, and bitters. She's taking adrenal strength. Is that a formula?
Yeah, by MetaFoods.
MetaFoods adrenal strength. Okay, do you have it? Do you know what's in it?
Yeah, I have it right here. It's okay. MegaFoods. Adrenal strength. It has, they break it down, which is nice. Restorative and strengthening complex, cordyceps mushrooms, reishi mushrooms, and astragalus root.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put protective fruit concentrate, wild orange, wild blueberry. And then anti-stress blend is ashwagandha root and basil leaf,
mm-hmm,
and ginseng root. And then adrenal and endocore replenishing blend is kelp powder, care powder, and other sea vegetables.
Great. You know, there's a lot of formulas out there, and I don't recommend or tout particular formulas. What I rather do is give you guys in the talks and in our materials more of the basic building blocks so that you can find for your people the formulas like that, or you can use the individuals. I like using individuals just because you can say, oh, take a little bit more of this and a little bit less of that. You can just monitor them as they're working through and as things are getting better or worse. And also for people who have a lot of food sensitivities, if they're taking a supplement that has a whole bunch of stuff and they're sensitive to one, then they can't take that formula. So, but it's a nice sounding formula, and there's a lot of others. Gaia makes a nice sounding one. Restorative Formulas makes one. Herb Farm makes one. No, Health Force doesn't have an adrenal. They have a liver. But this one sounds pretty darn good. The issue again is she sensitive? Is she sensitive to mushrooms? Some people are sensitive to mushrooms. And it's got a great blend of cordyceps and reishi, but also she might be sensitive to mushrooms. So you look at how that affected you. Did you get better or worse when you started taking that? And how long have you been taking it?
For about 2 weeks, and I do feel like it's helpful.
Great.
I stopped taking it when I ran out,
mm-hmm,
and I have noticed fatigue setting in again.
Great.
More than before. So I wasn't sure if it was the adrenals again getting a little bit, you know, that they're not back 100%.
Right.
Right. So that's why I thought
so
I would try it again.
So you did start taking, yeah, absolutely. So this is the way we work with people, right? It's really being careful when you're working with somebody one-on-one, especially. It's important that you're looking at what they're taking and you have them keep symptom journals. And nobody likes to keep symptom journals and diet journals, but they are really helpful. And the more you can get people to keep those, say, well, I added this and this is how I felt, and you can actually look back. They may not make the connection, but you can go back and say, huh, ever since they added that adrenal strength, she seems like her energy level's an 8 every day instead of a 6 every day, maybe having some results. Oh, ever since she added that adrenal strength, she's having more gas and bloating. Huh, maybe something in that formula is triggering it. So from a practitioner perspective, really looking at what they're taking, and when they put down a formula, encourage them to put down what's in that formula so you know. I like using the individuals because it's easier to tailor and customize, and it's great for people who are sensitive. On the other hand, it makes for taking a lot of different things. So it's really an individual basis, each person you work with whether or not you're going to do the individuals or the complex. But it sounds like it's a good complex, and if you notice a difference in your energy, just make sure you notice also, does it affect your gut? Does it cause a flare-up in those symptoms or a calming of those symptoms or nothing? Some things may just not affect those symptoms at all. Okay. B-complex, vitamin C, vitamin D, spirulina, fish oil daily, great. We'd want to look at what level she's taking and what format she's taking. So some B-complexes don't have the activated forms of the nutrients. For some, that's fine. For others, they need the more activated forms, and that could be based on their genetics or the state of their system and how much their digestion is working and a whole bunch of other factors. Melatonin and 5-HTP for sleep. And it sounds like your sleep issue is resolved, because when you first joined Before Begone, the sleep was a huge problem that you could never fall asleep.
Right. Again, kind of like the constipation issue, I can fall asleep as long as I'm taking something. I don't fall asleep naturally.
Yep. Okay. And it's the fact that the melatonin and the 5-HTP work, right, that seems to indicate that there's some issues with those neurotransmitters, right? That those are all in the same pathway. 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin. Serotonin's a precursor to melatonin. So she's helping that pathway. She has to make sure she takes her B vitamins when she takes those, because the B6 is needed to do those conversions between the forms. And sometimes 5-HTP supplements do also contain a little bit of B6 just to help it along, and that's helpful. And then you're taking intestinal movement. That's the health force for the constipation. Are you finding that that's helpful and that's keeping you moving on a regular basis?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a very good product. I've liked it.
Yeah. Okay. And it's not as stimulating as some of the Senna or Cascara products, where they can cause you to then have, like, convulsive bowels for hours after it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So diet, healthy diet, 90 to 90% of the time. Peanuts and dairy about every 2 weeks. Processed foods once a week. What kind of processed foods?
Well, I've had some potato chips. Mm-hmm. Again, not like massive amounts, but they might be in the house, and my resistance will be weak or whatever. It's, you know, again, noticing things like when we work with clients, I notice that when I'm tired, my resistance or willpower or whatever you want to call it,
right,
is way low. So that's usually when that'll happen. When I'm tired. Like a sugar thing, maybe some dark chocolate, mm-hmm, which I know is probably bad for the gut and the bladder.
And
the adrenals. So really that's about, if I'm eating some type of processed food, that's about it.
So let me ask you a few questions. And this is the kind of stuff when you're working with somebody that you really want to help them with this commitment piece, right? So Maura really wants to get this resolved, but she wants to get it. She's about 90-95% committed, right? She's not 100% committed. So I would say, what will it take to get you 100% committed?
That's a good question. I feel like I'm 100% committed, but then I have those weak moments when I'm either tired or fatigued or unconsciously doing it. You know, I might be serving it to my kids or whatever. They'll have friends over. Like, here was an incident that just happened a while ago. They all had friends over, and so they said, "Mom, can we please just have the potato chips?" And so I said, "Sure." A bunch of teenagers, of course, because they bring it in themselves if I don't get it for them. So I said, "Sure." So it's like I convinced myself, "Oh, just a couple potato chips is fine."
Mm.
Or I'll be putting them in the bowls and stuff, and then I'll grab and eat a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh, shoot, I wasn't supposed to be eating potato chips.
Mm-hmm.
Or else I convinced, like, I don't know, that mindset convinced myself, like, oh, just a couple will be fine.
Okay. So do you believe that just a couple would be fine?
Not anymore.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So the belief is not there anymore, because you realize that those little issues, especially with an inflammatory condition and all, can create the problem, like potato chips with all that rancid oil and, you know, it's just plus potatoes and blood sugar don't go along real well. And then the dairy, you know, cross-reacts with gluten, and you know you have a gut issue. So little bits of things like that. So you know it on a intellectual level. Is there a part of you that's thinking, why do I have to be so strict?
Yes, I guess part of me, you know, living with all the other family members that can eat anything under the sun and stuff, that why do I have to be so strict? That's why I guess I think, oh, come on, just a couple would be okay. But I have to, I guess, I realize that my constitution, no, a couple is not going to be okay.
No. And for the most part, you know, for people that have it occasionally, you know, we look at people and we say, oh, they're lucky because they get to do that and they don't have a flare-up in their symptoms. But you don't have a microscope to go into their body. You're not looking inside their body to see what actually that is affecting. And sometimes people, you think that, wow, they've been doing this all along, and all of a sudden something gives out. So it's really just a matter of committing to this body is sacred, and I'm not going to put any junk in it. Right? So let me ask you this. If you were serving them wine, or let's just say it wasn't your kids, okay, and you're at a party and they're serving, let's say, cocaine or cigarettes, you wouldn't think, oh, I'm just going to do it this once. It's no big deal, right?
Right.
Right. And meanwhile, there are people who smoke cigarettes and seemingly don't have a lot of issues until they drop dead at age 56, like my mother. You know what I mean? So I think part of this more, and I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, definitely things we need to do to help you to address this, but it's really going back and revisiting your commitment.
Okay.
And making a commitment like you did with gluten 13 months ago to be 100% is to make a commitment to only put foods that nourish you into your body.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be a life sentence, but make a decision that you're going to do this solid. You're going to make a 100% commitment to work on this gut issue, to work on the adrenals, to work on the thyroid, and you're going to be 100% for 3 to 6 months to bring balance back. And then you see how you feel, and it's the same thing like the food allergy testing. Then you see. But when you're in the throes of symptoms, until you get to a place where you can feel really good, even if it's just temporary, then you don't know the effects, right? Like you said with the peanuts, oh, it feels good until 24 hours later, I start to notice it. And it's the cumulative effect. So it's just something to think about. And if you weren't as, you know, resistant and having so much in your history, I may not be saying the same thing to you. But it's like I work with somebody who has long-term chronic issues or cancer, something really severe, differently than somebody who just, you know, has some kind of minor things that they want to work with in terms of how strict you need to be.
Right. So I'm someone that has to be strict, strict, strict.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you don't know what little things like this are triggering it. Hydrogenated oils, right? Remember the fatty acid pathway. You're thwarting your inflammation when you eat things that have those fats in them. And I know you're spending a lot of money and time on your health. And I'm just suggesting that you take that the next step in. So that when I say, I stick to a healthy diet 100% of the time. And I know I can say that. And I know the people that I work with that say that get the best results. Green tea is fine. I shun the coffee. Get the coffee out of there, the black tea. Green tea has so many good antioxidants in it that I would say that's not a problem.
Okay. Again, it's one of those, like, weak times when I wake up so tired.
Yeah.
Again, this is another question. Do you think I've had a sleep study done before that said I had sleep apnea, which was always very surprising because everyone said I didn't look like a case of sleep apnea. Right. Would there be any reason to redo it? Do you think that would give any clue of anything that's going on at night, why I wake up so tired some mornings?
It could, yeah. It could.
Okay.
It could definitely tell us something about that. I would also keep track of what are the some mornings.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd say like twice a week. Even after 8.5 hours of sleep, 8 hours of sleep, I'll wake up exhausted.
Okay. And then the other days?
The other days I wake up and I'm never bounce out of bed like I used to. But I feel okay.
Okay. So I would really be looking at those days, the 48 hours before. What's happened in that 48 hours? Were there extra stressors? Were those the days you had some of those potato chips? Were there, you know, were those the days you had some peanut butter? Were those the aftermath of the coffee? Or that's actually usually having the coffee as a result of those, so probably not that. But I would be looking at those 48 hours before.
Okay.
So if you could just do a solid 7 to 10 day sleep symptom and food journal and keep track of which days you wake up, what's your level of energy when you wake up in the morning on a 1 to 10 scale? Right, 10 being bouncing out of bed, 1 being completely, completely exhausted, can't get out. Same thing with your digestion, and just have a scale that you could rate yourself on. You can use the Before Be Gone blood glucose tracker, because that has places where you can say what your energy level is, your bowel movements. It's got tracking for everything. Do that solid for 7 to 10 days. And then really look back at, this day I woke up really tired and also had more issues with bloating today. Or every time I wake up tired, 2 days before that I did XYZ. Or just see if there's a pattern. There may or may not be. And this is something to work with your clients when it's really mysterious and there's something that happens 2 days a week rather than every day. You just really want to look at exactly what's going on. Okay?
Okay.
Cool. All right, let's just, so no mold exposures, exercise, outdoor time in the sun, all of this stuff. Meditation, do you do your heart math?
Yeah.
How often do you do your heart math activities?
I'd say probably 3 times a day.
3 times a day, great. Can you up it to 5?
Yes.
Okay, great. So Mara's making a commitment to up to 5. That's the other thing I would be keeping a list of, is commitments. Like when, as you're going through, and always ask people, are you willing to, rather than say, this is what I want you to do or I need you to do. Are you willing to commit to? And just ask them. And sometimes they'll say no, not yet. Or how about if I commit to this and you bargain? You say, okay. It's just going to take a little bit longer, but yes. So we're going to look at her activities. One that she's committing to is the journal, the diet tracking. Are you willing to do that? Did you say yes to that?
Yes, I will.
Okay. The two is the processed foods to stop yourself there.
Yes.
And then 3, I'm writing these down so I don't lose track of them, is the heart math 5 times a day.
Yes.
And more on stressful days, right? More when you feel like, okay, many versions of it. Because meditation, adding an hour of meditation several times a week to an already busy schedule is a lot. And it's great that you're doing it twice a week, and I applaud you for that, for taking that time for yourself. All right? But heart math is something you can do in 30 seconds to 2 minutes. So let's get you up to 5 times a day. Definitely, Maura, before every meal, before every intake, meal or supplement that you put in your body, take the breath, go into appreciation, settle yourself down and prepare your body to accept that. That's going to make a big difference.
Okay.
Okay? And the other thing you committed to is sticking with green tea, no black tea or coffee, right?
Right.
Okay. So we're making a list, and at the end of a session with somebody, go through the list. Okay, these are the things. Is this too much? Okay, do we need to start with a few of these? If this is too much, I want you to commit only to the things that you can do right away. Okay?
Okay.
And it says sugar. Sugar, you said twice a week. What kind of sugar are you taking in?
Again, that might be like a piece of chocolate. Probably that. I would say is a piece of chocolate.
So here's what I'm going to recommend for you. You have the Before Be Gone menu planner. There is a section in there on desserts. And there are a couple of little chocolate recipes that you can make and stick in your freezer. They take 5 to 10 minutes to make. Are you willing to give those a try?
Yes.
Okay. And that way, when you get that desire, you reach in your freezer and you take out some of your low glycemic chocolates.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Great. So, and when do you drink tap water?
That, it's most likely if I'm out or if I take my supplements upstairs in my bedroom,
mm-hmm.
I'll turn on the faucet. We have a reverse osmosis in the kitchen where I get most of my water.
Got it.
So it's, again, very small amounts.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Or if I'm out somewhere and that's
right. Right, you have to make the choice between tap water or dehydration. It's a tough choice. yeah, okay.